Welcome from Mrs. Jones. This is a podcast on I Love Math Differentiated Groups. If you want to get into differentiation, math is probably the easiest way to do that. It's a linear structure of several skills, and you always have students on different places in that continuum. Anytime you introduce a new skill, there are always children who master it quickly and easily, those who need just a bit more practice, and those who need some different methods. In order to differentiate for math, it's key to establish a structure early in the year and let the structure work for you. So basically, the structure remains the same, but you differentiate within that structure. And I Love Math Groups is that structure. And by the time you get to the spring of the year, the classroom just pretty much runs itself, and differentiation becomes what the students are accustomed to doing. My inspiration for I Love Math Groups was basically from the United Kingdom. I was able to watch several videotapes on a website called Teachers TV until it was recently shut down for people outside the United Kingdom. And I noticed that in their math videos, they had many times where the class gathered together for some instruction, and then three groups went off for a differentiated task, and then they came back together. And I thought that was really neat, but I also thought, well, I want groups that are flexible. I want my kids to be able to, if a child has a strength in geometry but maybe is weak in computation, that they can maybe be in the more challenging group for geometry, but then in a group that moves a little bit slower pace for computation. I also was lucky to be able to co-teach with a special educator for a year. He was a guy in elementary school, and those of you who are guys in elementary school know that you get instant love and respect from the kids, and every single kid in the room wanted to work with Mr. L because he was just that kind of guy. And so I really wanted to give the children all an opportunity to work with Mr. L, but at the same time, I wanted to be able to work with all of the students too. So that's how I came up with these differentiated groups, and that's how we get the name I Love Math. So what do you need to be able to do I Love Math groups? Well, this is basically for probably second grade and above. You do need to have two adults in the room. Three is nice if you can get it, but two is okay. That second adult can be a parent volunteer, it could be a paraprofessional, or my first year was a co-teacher who was a special ed teacher. You also need to have what you believe are three distinct groups of students. A group who's mastered the skill, an average sort of group that you just feel like they just need a little more practice and then they'll get it. And then a lower achieving group, a group that you think needs different instruction, not just more instruction. If you don't feel you have three distinct groups that are roughly equal in size, they don't need to be totally equal, but roughly equal in size, then really I Love Math Groups is not the instructional strategy that you want to use. You want to do something else. You also need to have three distinct areas in your room. The three distinct areas that I use are the students' individual desks. I have a back table that it's a large rectangular table that can fit as comfortably as few as two children or as many as 10 if I need to. And then I have what I call the morning meeting area, which is just a carpeted area where the children sit on the floor that's surrounded by our classroom library. Those three distinct areas are going to be three different teaching areas, and they need to be separated from each other so there's not a lot of noise carryover. You also need a lesson or a skill that lends itself to be chopped up into segments or to be chopped up into different types of activities. Your total time for I Love Math Groups needs to be a minimum of 45 minutes and a maximum of an hour and a half. So students are going to be changing groups. These are rotating groups. They're going to be changing groups about every 15 to 30 minutes. The last thing that you're going to need is a super grouper. I used to call super groupers pop quizzes, but then I had some students who were very, very nervous and anxious when I said the word pop quiz. And so I started calling them super groupers because that's what they are. They're an activity that's designed to create these three distinct groups. You can use lots of activities for a super grouper. You can use a homework assignment. You can just use a previous assignment. You can use some sort of assessment that you've had recently. But one of my favorites and one of the kids' favorites is to use personal whiteboards. And what I do is I create usually a 10-item super grouper that has three very easy items, four average items, and three extremely difficult examples. And I have students, I pass out the individual whiteboards, and students do the activity right then. When they finish each one, they show me, and then they put a tally mark in the corner of their slate for every one they get correct. And at the end, they count their tally marks and write that number, what I say, big and bold and loud and proud, on their slate and show me. And that determines their groups. Now, I say this is the best way because students really, especially young students, really need to see the immediacy of, we did this activity and that determines what group I'm in. And when you do that early in the year, you set up that expectation that these groups aren't at random, that they are selective. The students really get it. They really understand and they really buy into this. That being said, however, it's also kind of the scariest as a teacher because you never know exactly what's going to happen when your kids do the super grouper. There have been times that I've thought, yeah, I have three distinct groups. I definitely have some kids who've mastered, some that are average, and some that need something different. But then I do the super grouper and I find that's not the case. Maybe everybody has no clue. Or maybe everybody's mastered it. And then I've got to like, whoops, backpedal kids. So although it's scary, it's also extremely rewarding. But I wouldn't suggest it at the beginning. If you're just starting to do this differentiation structure, use a homework assignment or a previous assignment or something else. And then as you start to feel comfortable, then use the slates or the personal whiteboards as a super grouper. So basically what you're going to do is you're going to divide the lesson into three chunks. And you're going to be dividing the class into three groups. Now the three groups are I, L, and M. The I group is an independent group. The students work independently at their desks. And they usually do a review activity. And this activity is generally done independently because you do want to know what kids can do independently. So where do you get the materials for this independent group? Well, if you have a program that you're using like Saxon Math and Everyday Math, they have a review component built in. With Everyday Math, it's called Math Boxes. Saxon Math just has a big chunk of review in every lesson. You can also have students start their homework. This is also a great time to use technology or to use a learning center. And you want to try to differentiate that independent work as much as possible. If you're using the Everyday Math program, which has math boxes, I divide the math boxes into have-tos, which are math boxes you have to do, and choices, which are math boxes, if you have the time, it would be nice to try. You could do the same thing with Saxon Math. You could say, you know, you have to do 1, 3, 5, 7, and 9, and, you know, 2, 4, 6, and 8 are your choice if you have time. If you're having something pencil paper like that, you do need to teach the children how to correct their own work. I have the answer key out there, but when they go to correct, they must have a red pen or a marker, but they can go back and correct their work. And then have some sort of buffer activity after that. That's where you can use the technology or learning games. So that's the independent rotation. The next rotation you have is the lovely you. You are the lovely one. So for me, in my classroom, it's the lovely Mrs. Jones. During the rotation with me, this is where students receive differentiated instruction. With our the lowest group of students. We're working on a different way of getting that skill. And it's not always a skill and drill. Sometimes I find with those kids who struggle the most, it's because they have a difficult time grasping the concept. And so sometimes we don't have those kids apply their knowledge because their knowledge is so shaky. But I've actually found the opposite to be true. If we help them apply what they're learning to a real life situation, all of a sudden it clicks for them. You're also going to have an average group. This is a group where you're going to give them just a little more practice. You're going to give them a trick or a tip, or these are your students that you really believe, these are your average students that you truly believe, with just a bit more practice, are going to master the skill without anything special, without any bells or whistles. And then you're going to have a mastery group who's already mastered the skill and needs to go on to something more difficult. That could be doing the same thing with larger numbers. It could be, again, an application piece, or you could go on to an entirely different skill. Your third rotational group is your marvelous other adult. Your marvelous Mrs. McKenney, your marvelous Mrs. Bartlett, your marvelous Mr. LeVay. And this is another opportunity for differentiation. Or you can also have this person give sort of a standard lesson if they're strong in that area. Or if you're using a parent volunteer here, teaching the kids a new game is always something that's fun to do with that person. Now, there's another reason that these groups are called I Love Math, besides the fact that it is a phrase or a sentence that tells students in what order to move and where to go. There's also a hidden meaning. This is not a meaning that you're going to be sharing with your students, and you probably wouldn't share it with a parent volunteer, but you definitely want to share it with your co-teacher or an aide. The I, which is the independent group, the group that starts an independent work first, that is your high group, your mastery group. That group starts working independently because they shouldn't need any assistance whatsoever. And then they experience a differentiated instruction lesson with you, the lovely you, and another differentiated instruction with your marvelous helper. The group that starts with the lovely you, or in the love of I Love Math, L stands for low. This is your low group. This is the group that needs lots and lots and lots of support. So they get an entire differentiated lesson with you. Then they go to your marvelous helper and get another differentiated lesson with them. And then last, they go to the independent workstation. So they're getting lots and lots of help and support before they're asked to do something independently on their own. Your group that starts in math, or with your marvelous aid, that's your average group. So your average group gets a brief 15 to 30 minute differentiated lesson, and then they go off and do an activity on their own, and then they come back to the lovely you, the love is their last group, and where you're going to be checking in on them and making sure that they were able to accomplish what they needed to. So these are not just three rotating random groups. They're not even three groups that are grouped by skill. There's a method to the madness. There's a reason that students are placed in a group. It's for their maximum success. And again, this is something you do not want to share with your students. You will have students that will figure it out. Usually when I do I Love Math groups, which I do about two or three times a week, depending on what we're working on and what's needed, I would say about 10 to 20% of your kids are always going to be in the same group. You're going to have some kids who are high flyers, and math comes very easy for them, and they will always be in the high group. You'll also have a few kids that will always be in the low group. They always struggle with math. But I would say about 80% of most classes, the students end up in all three groups at one point or another. And the great thing is that kids don't feel a stigma about that. They're very self-aware, and they'll say honestly, I was in one group for one thing and another group for another thing. And since most everybody in the class switches around in the groups, everybody seems to be okay with it. So what does this actually look like? Well, this is what it looks like. You start with your supergrouper. Then you, based on that, whether it's done before time, ahead of time, or as part of the lesson, then you assign students their groups. Your high kids go to independent first, your lowest kids go to you first, and your average kids go with your marvelous helper first. You have a period of instruction, usually anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes, depending on how much time you have. Then, at a signal, everybody picks up and moves, and they all, of course, eventually learn where to move to. There's another 15 to 30 minute time period of instruction. You have a signal, and then everybody moves one more time so that all students have the opportunity to work independently and to work with you and to work with someone who's helping you. So what I am going to be doing is I had my class videotaped to get to see I Love Math groups. So please look for that on YouTube. For search I Love Math Differentiated Groups. And you'll get to see what a supergrouper looks like, and you'll get to see two rotations. It's not the entire rotations, but you'll get to see two out of the three rotations. So, from my classroom to yours, thank you for tuning in to this podcast.